Hello.
Jesus Christ.
Jeez, sorry about that. We all right? We all awake? Good, good. Welcome to this Flats and Shanks live podcast in association with Guinness at the Bear Pug Twickenham. Just give yourselves a round of applause for turning up.
Well done. Is that working? Is that working?
Yeah. I mean, we got a little VIP here section. Well done, guys. Paid a little bit extra, did you?
As far as we're aware, they haven't paid yet. Have you paid yet?
Looks like the holding pen for like the Jeremy Kyle show.
Well, it's worse than that. These are mates of mine, including my brother-in-law, Ryan, but these are mates of mine from Maidstone in Kent. Grew up on the mean streets of Maidstone. And so basically what we're saying is they tried to get in without paying because they're from Maidstone. They've arrived and paid. Because they're paid, there's every chance someone's going to get glassed in the next couple of hours. So just nice blokes until you piss them off. So just don't let them drink.
Could we just get a gauge of what nationality you have in the room? Make some noise if you're English. Well done. Any Kiwis here? Oh, a few. And a couple of Welsh at the front. Don't mess with those two. You look fucking mental.
We're not allowed to swear anymore. Joe and Justin are allowed to swear. We're not allowed to swear anymore because some of you, well, you all listen to the pod, presumably, or most of you. We've got an agent called Michelle. She's there on the stairs. And she, yeah. And the glasses, and she doesn't let us swear anymore because she thinks it makes us unappealing and as people. And she's right. She's right.
Dave, do you want to do the first intro as to our guests?
So, what we have, who should we introduce? Why don't I do the forward and you do the back?
Okay, perfect.
You want to do that? We're not going to have a massive, crazy build-up, but we've got a very interesting character on the far end. Interesting for lots of reasons. 59 caps for England. About shed loads of appearances for Quinn so far and more to come. One of the best loose heads England's had in a couple of generations, and very interestingly decided to stop playing for England before a lot of people thought he would, which we'll discuss in a minute. But ladies and gents, the one and only inimitable Joe Marler. Oh, and went on a Lions tour, but doesn't like to talk about it.
Can I just say, 59 caps and zero tries, which works out as...
What is the...
Yeah, very good ratio, that.
More than Leonard.
I actually got a guilt follow this week on Twitter by you, Joseph. So thank you for that.
He knew he was going to meet you, so he had to follow you.
Yeah, probably because you knew I'm your new boss now. But don't look at me like a boss, but know that I am, all right?
Pleasure.
That's what I'm saying. To my left, we have a former Southland Canterbury Crusaders, Leeds Ospreys, Montpellier Saracens player, 81 caps, is that right, for New Zealand?
That's right, Shanks.
Thank you, Wikipedia. 140 points. Play for the Barbars now, commentator and pundit, Justin Marshall, the champ. Put your hands together.
Did he ask you to call him the champ? Did ask you to call him the champ?
Oh, well, we played together, didn't we, on the Bar Bars in 2007.
Oh, sorry about that. The lads on tour, was it?
And he managed to... I mean, when you turn up to the Bar Bars, you get an envelope full of cash. It's been taxed already before, you ask. Don't you? You get half of it up front. And Justin, you pulled your calf, didn't you, on the first day? Real serious pull, grade two it was, but somehow dug in and managed to get the second envelope. On the Friday, didn't you?
Thing is, that sounds like really dodgy, because it is, but that's the Bar Bars who are kind of law unto themselves. But I remember being 20 years old and, believe it or not, pulling my hamstring in a game a couple of games before the end of the season when they'd already announced the England tour to South Africa. So Clive had already announced it. And going to see the doctor with one of the other Saracens players who'd had an injury, went to see the doctor, and the doctor was like, look, your hamstring is knackered. You've definitely got a tear in it. We've got a scan here. But he's like, just get on the plane. Get on the plane, because then you get your tour fee. I was like, honestly, we did the whole tour. I'm thinking, I'm never going to be able to play. But you get on the plane, because I was earning $5,000 a year at Sarries as a YTS player when I got picked for England. And I was like, just get on the plane. And when you're out there, tell him you've got a sore hamstring. But at least you're there. You're on the piss. You're on tour. And you're getting paid. And I had to play in all five games on the tour with a knackered hamstring. And I don't reckon I got above 60% pace, not that it was very quick, but 60% pace in five games. But it's just like, even the attitude then was get on and get paid. For Christ's sake, get paid. And it worked. It worked. We got it.
All right, moving on. Marshy, how's your week been? How's the liver? Taking a hammering?
Yeah, it's taking a hammering, actually. And, yeah, good morning, everybody. It's nice to finally get a word in.
Anyway, that was Justin, everyone.
I don't know how you're feeling, Joe, but bloody hell, I think this is going to be easy for you and I.
I'm just really pleased that you've remembered my name.
Yes, John.
We turned up and I said, hi, I'm Joe. And he's like, yeah, cool. One of the fans today, are you? And I was like, sweet, I'll just sit back down.
You security, mate.
It has been a tough week in terms of the liver, but it's been an enjoyable week. I guess the All Blacks in town, for the first time in 4 years, there's been plenty of interest, so I've enjoyed that. And I'm equally impressed that you've obviously grown up a little bit, Shanks, because being Welsh, you can now talk and read at the same time.
It's just pictures, Marshy, on there.
I like writing lists. I love writing lists. I don't know why.
The bone collector. Joe, is this an interesting week for you? Because I know last week was the first England game, first England test since you announced your international retirement. Prematurely something, but actually you don't think prematurely, and that's all that counts. But this is kind of the biggest game so far, the biggest game of the autumn. Do you wake up this morning thinking, actually, I've made the right decision, I can relax and just enjoy it as a fan for once and have a couple of beers? Or do you wake up thinking, I wished I'd left it till after the autumn because it's an extra 100 grand?
No, that hasn't crossed my mind at all. You know, I just come on this for the goodness of my heart, you know, just because I'm interested, not because I'm trying to make up for the loss of earnings. No, in all seriousness, I didn't know how I'd feel really until last week when I first woke up and the game was going to be on against South Africa. And I did wake up and go, fuck, I'd quite like to be out there, to be honest.
You've played New Zealand a few times, the Haka, you know, do you enjoy it? Do you embrace it? What do you do when you're watching it?
Well, you stand in front of it. Yeah, have you not? You've done it before.
No, I was just checking what you did.
Oh, personally? Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were asking what you're meant to do in front of it. No, you just stand there. I'm not one to... Fucking hell, you had a few, have you? This champ getting on.
He's up for it.
I'm not really one to put my foot in it and say things... you shouldn't do.
No.
So I've got to be very careful with what I say next. The Haka for me, I don't want to disrespect Justin here because he's only just learnt my name, so I want to keep it at that. But I'm like, are they taking the piss? Allowing them to do it. I know it's tradition and all that lot, but surely some traditions can be stopped because it just adds an extra 6 or 7 minutes for me outside.
Cooling down.
Yeah. I don't really like warming up anyway.
Yeah.
I don't usually take warm-ups that seriously, so I'm not overly warm. So imagine me, I'm singing my national anthem, which I'm belting out in tune. kind of sort of humming the Kiwi one. It goes on a bit too long, not a huge amount, knowing that I've got to wait for the Haka next, and then it's another fucking 7 minutes. And I'm like, lads, we need to crack on. I live down near Brighton. I don't know if...
You got to get away.
The M25 can be fucking murder. I'm telling you. So I'm saying, boy, come on, we've got to get on, you know, after match. So, yeah, it's a great tradition for New Zealand and fans. I know you get a lot of good photos, camera shots, you know, hairs on the back of your neck for the fans, but it's never really done anything for me, to be honest.
Is it? It's interesting because Austin Healey's written a column this week and he's saying that you got to get in their face and don't let them, effectively get in their face, don't just stand and watch it and let them do it. And there are different ways to react to it. But a lot of people have always said it gives the All Blacks an unfair advantage. But I never felt like that. I never felt like it was an advantage. I always felt like, well, as a kid, it was cool to watch. And as a player, cool to watch. It never felt like an advantage to me.
I just think them being better than everyone...
That's the worst bit.
...and the unfair advantage.
Yeah.
You know, the Haka's not really the issue there.
No.
It's just that... They're better than everyone at rugby. That's the unfair advantage. Yeah. Bastards. Absolute bastards.
I remember when Martin Johnson was the England coach, we'd playing against this game out in New Zealand, and he was like, it's about the Haka, and someone's about the advantage. And he said something along the lines of, it won't be the dance that's the advantage. It's Rico fucking Gear. And he scored a hat trick. he was absolutely dead right. That's the problem.
You've obviously captained All Blacks many, many times. You know, you lead the Haka at the front. Comfortable?
Oh, I didn't have to do it, Shanks, thank God. You know, that usually goes to Māori player, or it then sort of transpired that Tana Umanga was able to do it. He was leading the team and he also led the haka. But nowadays, the captain, yes, is right at the front of the pyramid. But I used to be as far away from the front as I possibly could be, standing beside Andrew Mertens, because you think I'm bad at the haka, he's really shit at the haka.
No, he was. He was embarrassing at the haka, absolutely embarrassing. I used to watch him and only him. He was amazingly bad at it.
Oh, he's terrible. The worst thing was, I actually thought standing by him would make me look good, but that actually was counterproductive, because standing beside him, there was like 22 eyes looking straight in that zone. Because, you know, they say, oh, stare somebody down, make sure you stare back if you're in the opposition. So they're all staring at Mertz because he's shit at it. And I'm stupid enough to stand beside him. So they're staring at both of us. So that was a really bad idea. But one of my first experiences where the haka went a little bit pear-shaped was in 97. I was captain of the All Blacks at Old Trafford against England. And that was the catalyst for now them being separated, because Richard Cockerell and Norm Hewitt basically headbutted each other. I was crapping myself anyway, because it was the first test I'd ever captained against England, and all of a sudden it's going to kick off in the haka. I've got two absolute nutcases with great, great heart, great intent for the game, but absolutely no brains whatsoever. So, you know, you never know where that's going to lead. So it was that was a funny experience to be told off by the referee for what my player was doing in terms of the haka. But that was a catalyst for them separating it from there on in, that you weren't allowed to advance, etc. It wasn't a great day for me, that, actually, because about 20 minutes into the game, Jono was the captain for England. He knocked me out. So I had this problem with the haka accident. And then Jono knocked me out.
What accident was that?
Yeah, he accidentally knocked me out with his fist. But that was the good old days, like, you know, with this HIA now, and they're very politically correct about concussion, etc. You know, they find it, and there's a guy on the sideline spotting it. Jono knocked me out, and you know when you've been sparked out, gentlemen, don't you? You're out. And I sort of got rolled over by this is the day before the medical staff are your own. It's just the Old Trafford medical staff come on. And so they sort of roll me over and sort of throw about 3 litres of water on my face. And I don't know why they do that, because that only gets you wet.
Yeah.
And the bloke sort of slaps me on the face and he goes, you're right. And I look up and I see his yellow vest with Old Trafford on it. And he goes, where are you? And I said, at Old Trafford. And he said, good, you're fine to carry on. No problem.
I remember playing New Zealand in 2004. I was just checking to see if you were playing then, but you weren't. It was Perry Weppu at 9. And we had this idea of how we beat New Zealand, because obviously the haka, you know, they get up for it, don't they? It's a bit of an emotional high for New Zealand. And what we thought we'd do at Wales is we'd keep our tracksuit tops on for the anthem over our shirts, and then we'd stand and watch the haka, you know, respect it, and then really slowly, like, walk to the side of the field, take off our tracksuit tops, then really slowly get into position, because we thought that really sort of fucked them up.
How'd it go?
Well, do you know what, mate? It was probably the best result Wales have had against New Zealand in like 60 years. We lost by a point. What, did I score? Yeah, I scored. Thanks for asking. but we've done everything. We've done everything at the haka. You know, we've tried to get the haka before the anthem, so you finish on your home anthem and you go out.
Wasn't there one where you didn't let them do it?
Yeah, this is the one, you let me finish.
Oh, wow. It's almost like we've planned it.
Yeah, show it for rehearsal.
You go now.
Yeah, it's not a fucking chat show. and they weren't having any of it whatsoever. They said, look, the haka, it's tradition, you do it before kickoff. And we said, no, it's this Principality Stadium, you got to do it before. And they said no, and we said yes, and it went on and on. Eventually, they did the most powerful haka they've ever done in the changing room with the BBC camera crew in there. And if there's one thing I learned, mate, against playing the All Blacks, is just don't really piss them off. 41-3 that day. Half time. But what I will say, you know, the penalty Stephen Jones kicked was right on the touchline. It was phenomenal. Richard McCaw was offside. Phenomenal. We gave him 3 cheers after. They're just too good, aren't they, basically?
Remember Buck Shelford? Obviously, you know Buck Shelford, but Wayne Shelford, Buck Shelford, one of the greatest of all time and all that. For a year, before he went to Sarries Marshall, I was at Sarries, and he was our head coach. He was director of rugby at Sarries for a year. Didn't go brilliantly. But then we went over to play against in New Zealand in 2010, and we played against the Maoris in Napier, and he was their coach, or he was there or something like that on the sideline and whatever, and we lost the game 36-35 or something. It was a good game. But anyway, we're at the end, and the haka goes on at the start, and it was an amazing haka. It was like all 23 Maori guys. It was an amazing haka, and I was standing in the middle of the line, and I loved it. It was great fun, so I really enjoyed it, and I was smiling and whatever. And after the game, you say hello to the lads, you pop in their change rooms. We had a couple of cans of spates. It was nice, really nice event, you know. And then you go to the post-match function, and it's rammed like it is in here. All men. There was not a female in the room. And it was like, we noticed it after a while, and we mentioned it to someone, because there were women in the crowd. And we mentioned it to one of the players, is that, oh, the women weren't coming here. This is the man's pub. And you're kind of like, oh, this is a bit odd, a post-match function. We're all in our suits and stuff. And it's not a surprise to anyone who's ever watched a game of rugby. There are some very big Maoris on this planet. There were some massive Maori guys. And one of them walked over to me. We literally had a pint in our hand by the bar, walked over to me. And he sort of tapped me. And he's a massive guy in a leather jacket. And his two mates were massive guys in leather jackets. He said, I saw you during the haka. Why were you laughing? I said, I wasn't laughing. You were laughing at the haka. Why were you laughing? You were number one. I was like, yeah, why are you laughing? And I was like, I wasn't laughing. I was smiling. I enjoyed it. No, you were laughing. And he put his pint down. And he said, put your pint down. I was like, is he serious? Is this guy serious? Like, are we going to go here? Is that what's going to happen? And Buck Shelford was right next to him, was right behind him. And I was like, Buck, is this guy serious? He goes, he laughed at the haka. And Buck literally turned around and goes, shit, Fletz, you're on your own, mate. That was it. You're on your own. And a member of staff came in. This bloke was going to go. He was like 50 years old. We were going to be scrapping at the post-match function. That was it. And then it was... Liam Messam, I think, came up to me about 10 minutes later and he's like, oh, you're the guy who played number one. Yeah, yeah. He's like, sorry about that, but we all saw you laughing. Don't fucking laugh again. So I said, firstly, I wasn't laughing. I really enjoyed it. I actually felt like a privilege. Secondly, fuck off. Like, it's just
Joe, what do you have to do? Cooking some eggs or something, is it? Calming down.
Anyway, I gave him a dry slap. No, I didn't. I bought him a drink and then bought him another drink and another drink and it was fine.
So...
chill out, lads.
So Joseph St. John Marler, you finished now. That's his middle name, by the way.
Pardon?
St. John.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's not my middle. Where the fuck have you got that from?
Grindr.
Oh, fuck.
Just checking his profile now.
Goldfinger.
That's bollocks, mate, because I've turned my privacy on, so that's bullshit.
It was on Wikipedia. Probably have to edit that bit out as well. You know, obviously 59 caps, you've been in the England camp a long time. who were the sort of characters, apart from yourself, that entertained you sort of day in, day out?
The obvious one is Hask. And when you say entertained is loose. He'd always hold court in the dining room, breakfast, lunch or dinner. He'd be at the table. More often than not, he'd be looking for the coach's table. The amount of times I've caught him next to Eddie or trying to make Eddie laugh, and Eddie loves it because Hask thinks it's Eddie liking him and, you know, becoming really fond of him. But he's not. Eddie's just sat there taking the piss out of him and just, mate, fuck, 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 fuck. And Hask... And Hask is like, yeah, he loves me. He's good. Yeah.
Just going really well for me.
Yeah. So Hask is the one, but I could only ever really spend 4 or 5 minutes on that table and then go, oh, fuck's sake, I've heard this. It's not this one again where the courser comes screeching into Penny Hill car park and I'm like, right, I pick the stuff up. And I'm like, someone else, you deal with him. I'm thinking. And usually by the end of it, he's sat on his own, still telling the stories, hoping that everyone who's moved tables can still hear him. So he's probably one of the bigger characters there, but he's obviously not there anymore. It's quite...
What happened with the Watergate? For those, I think we all saw it, you squirt a little bit of water on Hask and he... Well, he didn't like it, really, did he?
No, sir, you can't do that. You can't squirt water in my face. Yellow card, leave the field, thank you. I grabbed his scrum hat at a ruck just to try and annoy him. You know, stay on the legal side of the laws, not the illegal side of the laws.
Yeah.
We'll go with that. Yeah. Still learning. Yeah. And I'd ripped it off. And he was getting really angry. He's choking me on the floor. I'm like, oh. Because, you know, we get on. But I've... That's what you do, no? That's what you do.
That's what you do.
I've nicked his scrum hat, and it's all, you know, argy-bargy. I've walked off, and you don't see it on the TV, but I've tucked his scrum hat under my shirt and walked off. That's why it looks like I've got a gut. I haven't. So I've walked off, and I've hiding, and you can see him losing the plot. He's like, where's my scrum hat? Where's my fucking red scrum hat? I want my scrum hat. I need my scrum hat. Where is my scrum hat? And I'm like giggling away like a kid, as you do, trying to find things to it. And then he realises I've got it, and I just lob it on the floor. And that's when he has to walk over to try and get it. That's why he comes walking past over. And as he does that, I'm having a drink, and I've just gone straight in his face as if to say, oh, calm down, mate, you know, just chill out a little bit. To which he's then turned around and... Ah!
Lost it, hasn't he?
Lost it. Absolutely lost it. He'd been out for a while, injured, trying to get back in the England game, in the England squad. Eddie was at the game. It was his first game back. He'd just come off the bench. And I saw that as an opportunity to say, no, you're not playing for England again.
Yeah. Your career's over, mate.
I'm going to help with that one. And it was also Danny Kerr. So that's also unseen.
Yeah.
He was the instigator on it all. But because everyone, you know, Danny's a nice cheeky chappy and... Yeah, everyone loves Danny. I do love Danny, by the way. Good mate, mate. That wasn't sarcasm. That was me just saying that good...
It's not Cockney rhyming either, is it?
No.
Carry on.
Yeah. And he gets away with blue murder, to be honest with you, because everyone likes him and I don't have that effect. Violins can play now. So it was actually him that instigated it. But, you know, I gave him a hug after the game with Hask and... Just said quietly to him, 1-0, thank you.
Yeah, that's a win. That's a major win. But you watch the game these days, and I know that you've been playing for Quins for a long time, and the game's changed a lot since you started playing, and towards the end of when we were playing and you started playing, and there was more scrapping. And I remember you know, coming up against people like Marcos, Ajerza and all that, and everyone's swinging and sticking the nut in and that sort of stuff. And now it just can't happen as much, because as soon as you do it, you're in trouble. And it's kind of, we have to say it's better for the game, but the truth is the stories were better 10 years ago, weren't they? It just
was. Well, yeah, if you think about the story I've just told, it involved me squirting water on another man's
yeah,
face.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You even listened to Justin's story that, you know, he's talking about punching, a scrum half getting away with punching someone, or, you know, half getting away with it. And I'm like, I'm looking at myself like, I'm too fucking young. I should have been born.
Exactly.
When you... No, not that old. You know, somewhere in between there. And now, although it is interesting, because you've got to find new ways, or I've got to find new ways to enjoy myself on the pitch.
Yeah.
With sort of random bits of fun that isn't illegal.
Apart from all the swinging and landing, there's also what it really was like was everyone thinking they're really hard... Pretty much every rugby player being crap at actually fighting when it comes to it, and being 18 and playing in France and being flat on your front on the bottom of a ruck where you can't move your arms, and having someone from above you and behind trying to rip your balls off to the point where you have to have stitches in your scrotum because they try so hard and their fingernails rip your balls, and then someone else while you scream trying to pull your eyeballs out of your head. And it's like, I was at posh school 6 months ago. We had silk lined blazers at Dulwich College, and I wore penny loafers to school, and now I'm going to be blind and scrotumless. And it's my hero that's... I won't say his name, but it's because it's my hero that's doing it. The French front row at that point at Toulouse, my hero that's doing it. So I will say nothing, and I will be happy to be gouged. Thank you very much.
Turning me on a bit, then you were.
You've obviously got over it.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Marshy, talk about tough oppositions. Who was the toughest you played in your time?
Look, I guess a lot of the test matches I played, being Southern Hemisphere orientated, was against South Africa and Australia. So two of the guys that I came up a lot against was the late Jos van der Westhuizen, who was just on his day, probably not just the greatest scrum half in the game, he was probably one of the best rugby players on the planet. So he could spin a game like nothing else. And the other one, obviously, was George Gregan. 139 test matches, all of them at this level. You know, he never buttoned off. He's super competitive. always wanted to win. Whereas Yus could fluctuate a little bit. He could have little sulky moments like Shanks does and then pick himself back up. But when he was good, he was very, very good. So, you know, consistently, I think probably over the period, George Gregan's the one. But he's just super competitive. You know, he's a scrum half and he never wanted to lose. He was, you know, his mouth was going as quick as his feet was for every test match that he played. And just a little story about George that typifies the want and the will to win. One of the first times I ever played it, now we're good mates, we get on really well, which is hard to believe, but we do. And we'd played each other right through age group rugby and then ended up playing test matches against each other. He was a couple of years ahead of me, so I played my first test match against him in Brisbane, and he was captaining Australia. I was standing beside the scrum. Now, leading into this game, there was a lot of media attention because there was a young referee making his first big appearance, really, in a big game called Craig Joubert. And the Wallabies, being a very good team at that time, they smelt a rat. They thought, right, there's an opportunity here. So we lead into the game, and after 10 minutes, it's very evident to me what they're up to. Every single time he blows his whistle, every time there's a breakdown, they are at him. He's not rolling away, they're offside, not releasing the ball, get them back. Everything that he goes to try and officiate on, they question. They're all going at him, hammer and tongs, keep going, keep going, keep going. You can see Joubert getting really frustrated. So we go to a scrum. Ford gets injured again. And so while the Ford's getting taken care of, I'm standing next to George waiting for him to get his medical treatment. And Joubert's had enough. So he grabs George and he said, look, mate, this is ridiculous. It's been 20 minutes. These guys are at me. Every single decision I go to make, it's not good enough. And we can't continue the game like this. It's got to stop. Every decision I go to make, you're questioning. It's all the players. They're all talking. You're the captain. You've got to get control of it. I was listening away. This was intriguing. You've got to deal with it. And I thought, this is quite strong for a young referee. He said, if you don't deal with it, there's going to be problems. It's like there's 10 different referees out here. And George said, yep, and you're not in that top 10. We lost that test match. They had control of the ref. But that's George, you know. That's the competitive guy. Never wanted to lose and never wanted to be not getting the last word in.
But you know the whole controlling referees thing, and some players have been brilliant at that over the years and influence refs at key times, and some people like Lawrence Dallaglio have just offered a sermon at every single decision. So in the end, I think the refs just say, well, just let it go Lawrence's way to save the earache or whatever it was. But I remember playing against Leicester as a young bloke at Welford Road, and Shanks, you played. I think you were against Will Greenwood, and we were winding Shanks up all week because Greenwood was a genius and Shanks was just quite strong despite looking weird. And but you scored a couple of tries and it went well. I think we won up there, whatever. But I remember I was a loose head and I swapped over to tight head, which isn't a lot of fun, as you'll know, Joe. And I was against Graham Rowntree, who was 55 cap international, and pretty tough, you know. Because we were loose head kind of rivals, he was much better in the end, but we were rivals effectively. He was very keen to get stuck into me when I was on the tight head. So I was sort of, you know, batting down the hatches type thing, and it was kind of going all right, not really moving forward, but surviving. And then someone slotted me in a scrum, and I didn't know who it was. All I knew was that I was 19, 20, whatever, and you cannot go to a place like that and let them take liberties. So we come up sort of swinging, and no one's hitting anyone, but we're swinging and trying to nut each other and bite each other, and it all gets broken up. And Steve Lander, the referee, takes us over to one side, and he's like, right, Flats. Everyone calls me Flats. Everyone calls Graham Rowntree Wig. Everyone's only ever called him Wig. And he said, Flats, do this, and you Wig, you behave yourself. He goes, got that clear? Is that clear? You stop doing that, Flats. You get your bind up, Wig. You stop doing that. And he said, anything to say? And Wig just said, that's Mr. Rowntree to you. That was it. That was all he said. And the ref laughed. I laughed. Wig didn't laugh. And that was it. And he absolutely alphaed him. He completely alphaed Lander. And I just got pinged off the park after that. Dominated him.
David, any danger of talking about today's game?
Oh, the bloody rugger that's on today. I can't wait.
Joe can't wait.
Right. Yeah. So there's the rugger's on. It's blimmin' happening. Unfortunately, the All Blacks haven't arrived with England unbeatable with Manu in banging form like they were last time. Anyway, they've arrived, and their arrivals' favourites, Joe. How do you see today's game likely going, if that's a sentence? What do you reckon might happen in the game?
I think there'll be a ball.
They will always will be.
No, seriously, let's be serious now. Give some serious analytical feedback on the game.
There's a teammate.
Thank you. Just double checking who's playing.
Don't worry about the penis drawn on the paper.
Very accurate here. It's tiny.
Scale.
Shanks reckons if you can't draw all of your friends' genitals that you play with, then something's wrong with you. That's true, isn't it, Shanks? You can describe everyone's private areas that you play with, can't you? Yes. Yes or no?
If you can't look at another man's penis in the shower, there's something wrong with you. If you're going like, if you're like this, if you're like this.
I'd 45 seconds ago, I'd literally just said, let's talk some serious analytical stuff.
Yes, true, actually.
And it immediately went to drawing cock and balls. But that's fine. That's the effect.
Again, we'll edit
have.
That bit out.
It's going to be tough, isn't it? England, it's going to be tough. But I do keep thinking back to 2012. Mm. You know, people wrote England off then, saying, you know, best All Blacks teams coming to town. They're just... run him through. I would have liked to have seen Manu involved in the 23, but yeah. As far as I know, he's probably picked up another knock,
yeah.
Which is a shame for him. But yeah, I think if they can show some grit like they did last week in the forwards and take it to him a little bit more, they might be in with a chance. If they start off giving away pens left, right and centre, they're going to struggle.
Yeah, and it's sort of the question is, it's the eternal question in rugby. And again, it's like the... Does a hacker give an advantage? No, being better than every other team gives them an advantage. But in terms of how you beat them, the Springboks showed one way to beat them the other week, which was just completely in their faces, swarming them super, super physical. I'm not sure England have that sort of bulk and mindset to do that, especially with Billy not playing, with you not playing, Joe.
Ovs.
But Ovs and Mako. Yeah, with Mako not playing. So I wonder what would be the plan for England to beat this All Blacks team?
To be quite frank and honest,
yeah,
I tried 5 times.
Yeah,
I failed 5 times. So you're asking the wrong bloke.
Got it. Got it. It's a good point. How would you know?
Yeah.
Has anyone got Jason Leonard's number? Actually, Shanks wouldn't know, I wouldn't know, Joe wouldn't know. Marsh, you've never beaten the All Blacks, but you've played in All Blacks teams that have lost. So how might England, how should England try and beat them today?
Look, there's no doubt about it. I actually agree with Joe that, you know, opportunities are always there, and regardless of all the lead-up and build-up into a game and the talk about injuries, et cetera, et cetera, that doesn't defy the result. So, you know, you have to make sure that you... What are you looking at me like that for?
I
don't think defy was the word, was it?
I'm just absorbing the chat so I can use it later on. Go.
Oh, right.
Steal it off you.
Look, when I think about it, and I know we'll go a little bit more in depth into some of the... I agree with you as well, Flats. So that's 2 props I've agreed with in 2 minutes, which is a miracle. Mm. That, you know, there's no doubt about it that this game is set up quite nicely, but it's whether or not England are brave enough to do some certain things in this game against the All Blacks. And one of them is defence. I think Eddie came out and he watched the Lions series. He's got John Mitchell on board. He saw how frustrated the All Blacks got with the way the Lions defended in the second and third test. You mentioned South Africa. They defended out to in as well and stopped the outside. The All Blacks want to play in the outside channels. And what the Lions did successfully in South Africa, they cut that outside channel off, but it does have a huge element of risk in it. So it's whether or not they're brave enough to do that. And secondly, not going to accumulate in threes to beat the All Blacks. And so when I say brave, I say England come out of the blocks. They have a great amount of sustained pressure on the All Blacks. They fatigue them defensively. They win a penalty after all that. The All Blacks' hands are on their hips. They've been under the pump. And it's a kickable three. That's not going to win you the test match. They've got to go for more. And are they brave enough to go turn down three to go for 5 and 7 and accumulate that way? That's mentally the attitude they've got to take into the game. And why wouldn't they? You know, there's an opportunity there just to take the game by the scruff of the neck, and everybody's saying that the All Blacks are going to win. So go, you know what, we're going to take it to you.
Do you think, I think Barrett will probably kick a goal today, yep, over McKenzie. We saw against South Africa some of those pressure kicks didn't quite go to plan. I mean, is that a little bit of a worry if England are in the game with 10 minutes to go? 2 or 3 points difference. When the penalties matter, a little bit worried about whether Barrett can nail them.
Yeah, I think so. But I also believe that's why he has got that enigma, that those big pressure ones, which he did miss against South Africa. The All Blacks actually scored more tries against South Africa and Wellington, yeah. but they couldn't accumulate the points from Barrett's boots. So that ultimately cost them a test match. But that's why they've picked Richie Mwanga on the bench. He'll be injected into the game 25, 30 minutes. And he has been taking the goal-kicking responsibility. So I think they've recognised that that is a problem, and that's why he's been chosen.
I mean, we won't go too hard on Bowden Barrett. He's up for third IRB World Player of the Year this week.
Here's one for you on that, Tommy. I would say Bowden Barrett is an unbelievably good rugby player, but I would argue that he has not had his best year. He's still better than almost everyone else that's playing, but he's not. I would say, why isn't Tadhg Furlong up for World Player of the Year? Like, if you're looking for someone who, in his position, doesn't kick goals, but you played against him, Joe, and I'm sure there are plenty of great tight heads knocking about, but actually, in terms of someone who can do everything he's expected to do plus a load more, I don't see many players on the planet more rounded and capable than him in a game. Would you agree with that?
No, I do agree with that, actually. You only have to look at the Leinster game. They play Wasps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he's...
Outside channel.
He's in the outside channel, and I'm like, is he taking a piss?
I know.
And I get really frustrated and upset because I'm good mates with Mako, I'm good mates with Tadhg from that tour, and I look at him and I sat him down a couple of times. I said, lads, you have to stop this.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is putting me out the job. Because they're now going to look at loose heads and tight heads and go, we don't want scrummages. What's that? No one likes a scrum, do they?
No, not really.
No.
I can't say I do.
Right. No. Yeah. So we don't want them. We want our props to be able to pull it out the back, look for little grubbers through, carry the ball 15 to 20 times a game. 15 to 20 times a game.
Yeah.
Arrogant.
What?
That means they're getting off the floor quickly and looking for work.
Yeah.
And for me, I think that's nonsense. But no, all jokes aside with Tadhg, I don't get it. I don't get why they haven't looked at him and gone, well, he's a prop, he's a world-class scrummager, but he's also a world-class ball carrier, defender, contributes around the field. I mean, maybe it's an all Kiwi panel that have picked this.
That's it. Marshy, you were on the panel, weren't you? No.
No, I wasn't.
But it's interesting. I mean, there's never been a prop nominated for World Player of the Year. Never been. When you think there have been some pretty good props over the years, Carl Heyman never got nominated. Okay. You know, find a bit odd. Anyway.
We'll lift this conversation back up now.
We should have left that. Just me and you. We'll carry on.
Get a room. Marshy, McKenzie at fullback. Chris Ashton's in on the wing. Presumably, obviously, because of his support lines as well. But I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot of cross-field kicks. You know, when you get into the Kiwis 22, trying to isolate McKenzie in the air. You know, both Chris Ash and Johnny May pretty good in the air, a lot taller than Jack now. A little bit of a worry for you?
Oh, well, it's a strength. There's no doubt about it, as you mentioned. The danger in that is obviously being in that zone. And then that's a risk. There's a risk element in that tactic as well, because you're effectively kicking the ball away.
Yeah.
So you've got to get the kick absolutely bang on. You've got to get the chaser there. And you've got to win the ball back, because otherwise you're just giving it back to the All Blacks. And I think, you know, what you want to do in a test match against the All Blacks, if I was playing, well, actually, you know, I have played against them for the Barbarians. You just don't want them to have the ball more than you. And teams that think that they effectively are going to shut the All Blacks down and pin them with territory and keep gifting them back the ball will find themselves on the wrong side of the scoreboard. So, you know, that tactic's all very well to use, but I would use it sporadically because you are giving the ball back unnecessarily.
Just on that New Zealand back line now, we sort of know everyone out there. Sonny Bill Williams, we know what he's going to bring. But Jack Goodhue, right, pretty inexperienced. He's had a few caps, but he's looked unbelievable, hasn't he? You know, he looks like that is his, you know, he's going to be the next 13 for New Zealand for a while.
Yeah, he's a classic centre, I think, in the mould that, you know, he runs hard. He tackles, he's got good pass from both hands. You know, he does everything in the game that you didn't when you played centre. So
I was just ticking everything off in my head then. Yeah,
decoy.
Got it.
But I think he's the way that they like to use him and the importance of him is for around the likes of Sonny Bill Williams, who is a great ball runner. He has got distribution skills, but often you'll see the All Blacks use him as a decoy runner. If they're not using him to hit up, they'll use him as a decoy, and then you need a centre with jamming in defence that can shift the ball and has got good vision. And Goodhue's a classic. He's just back from, can you believe he had glandular fever?
Really?
Of all things.
These
yeah.
days.
The kissing disease.
How Edwardian of him.
Kissing disease.
Oh, God, how many times have I heard that?
That's only... only in Wales, hey?
Still got it.
It's quite common on Grindr as well.
Oh. Yeah. Just,
you know. Yeah. You've been sniffing glue? You've got spots around your mouth? No, it's fine anyway.
Do we have any questions that anyone wants to ask?
Before, yeah, and we want you to ask questions.
Feel
and we
free.
Want you to do that. And we at the back there. And we, yes.
We'll repeat.
How okay. do England stop
First off, what's your name?
Phil.
I'm Phil.
Phil. Okay, just one name, yeah, Phil, fine, like Seal.
He's like Coutinho.
McLovin.
One name.
What was your question again? How do...
What's your name, Diddy?
Oh, okay, Joe, how does one stop?
We are so at the rugger. Wait. How does one stop this ruddy Barrett chap? He's running riot.
So Frilly. Frilly.
When he says one, does he mean one. He wants the loose head to stop? What's yeah. this? Yeah. This one?
No, he thinks he's playing. Phil,
you're just expecting the loose head to get upright.
Ronaldinho, you're not playing. It's not Phil, one. Yeah.
He's off to Gymkhana after the rugby anyway. Right, how do you go about stopping Barrett? Serious question. I want a serious answer.
Well, I'd ask Owen Farrell, number 10, to hit him as hard as he hit yesterday's last week, but in the first 5 minutes, okay. and remove him from the field.
Just quickly, what you're...
That's how you stop him. That's how you would stop him. That is one answer to yeah. it. Thank you. One agrees, doesn't just, one.
All right, thank you. I very much like the way you've expressed yourself through dress today, but we will take a photo of that. But what were your thoughts on that tackle from Farrell and Esterhazen? Are you along the lines of legal? Enough arm wrap for you? I mean, I don't want to put
an answer in your head. No, there wasn't any arm wrap from his right arm. It was a penalty.
Okay.
Yeah, of course
but
it was.
I definitely loved the hit, and I wanted... I was like, yeah, well, don't give it, because there's a chance we might lose if you do give it.
Any more questions, you guys? Brilliant. Thanks. Thanks for coming, guys. Yeah, we got one in the middle there. Why do we think they've dropped Jack Noel for Chris Ashton after last week's game? Why do we think? Joe, what do you think?
Well, you couldn't drop Johnny May. He's on fire, isn't he?
Yeah.
And you're hoping that he scores another wonder try like he did in 2014. Mm. But the real answer is I don't know, because I don't. But I'm sure Justin have a better insight than me. Please.
Thank you very much for that. I really appreciate it.
right, Jack Noel was on the wing last week.
Yeah, when that game was on, I was actually in the middle of Roppongi in Japan, so I didn't really miss that.
And Roppongi never sleeps, Marshy.
It does not, no.
But Chris Ashton, we know about his threat.
Yep.
But do you think the All Blacks... This is leading from your question, adding another question to that, if you don't mind. I've got a microphone, so I'll do what I want. Whenever we used to play in whatever team against particularly good teams, so if you're playing for your club, you're playing against Leicester, who were dominant for a long time, or was dominant for a long time, or you're playing for England and you're playing against the All Blacks, suddenly what you find the coaches saying all week is just another game. It's just another game. It's just another game. But they never say that for all the other games. They just say it for the biggest game. And you used to spend like 8 days of the week leading into playing against New Zealand, preparing for New Zealand, and are watching what they do and what they do and what they do. And I always wonder... It ties in with the Ashton threat. I'm sure New Zealand, the All Blacks, will analyse England, but how much time will they spend thinking and talking about the opposition versus how they think and talk about themselves? Because I used to play against good sides and think, are they as worried about us as we are about them? That's what I wonder. Is there an answer?
Was that a question?
So anyway...
I switched off about halfway through. I thought...
What is a double-dip recession? I did this thing with
Sean Fitzpatrick
last year, and I did that to him, and he goes, what you've done there, Flats, is you've asked a question, then answered it, and asked another one, and answered that too. So shall I just fuck off home?
Anyway, well, I'm not going to answer it then.
Anyway, do the All Blacks spend a lot of time worrying about people like Chris Ashton, or do they get on with their own stuff?
No, they'll analyse and look at strengths and weaknesses, as they do for every team. Look, I think Ashton's been included simply because he's experienced and he's a good defender. And I think that might give a little bit of an insight that England are going to try and push forward and aggressively defend the All Blacks today. And a player like him is also dangerous. He does seem to have a knack of getting intercepts, picking off passes, and I think that's why he's been included. So, yeah, the All Blacks will be aware of those threats, so they'll analyse that and make sure that they don't throw those passes that he can cause them problems with. But, yeah, they go through the same process as every team. They respect England for what they will bring. They'll look at all the sort of finer details of the game and analyse it in any other way. But, yeah, it is a cliche, but it is just another game.
Mm. I think because Elliot Daly's playing at 15 as well, made a lot of breaks last week. You know, he didn't really link up with his players, but Chris Ashton's support lines are absolutely incredible. I don't think it's like a support line of a nine. You know, he just gets in front of the ball all the time, managed to get on so many tries. What was your... were you impressed with Mark Wilson at 8 last week? Had a cracking game, didn't he?
Yeah, he was brilliant. Slightly out of position. He's usually like 6, 7. Mm. Not really an 8, usually, is he? But he's a grafter. Top bloke, and it was his first start at Twickenham. Really pleased with him. I just think the area that we might get parity, or, you know, maybe a good humdinger, as they say in... where do
in
they
Rugger,
say that?
Bloody Rugger, they say.
In Rugger. One believes that Marrow and Cruiser up against Brody, Retallick and Sam Whitelock will be...
Yeah, that's nice.
One to watch today for me.
Yeah, why do you think they didn't pick Courtney Laws? We thought that he would be selected.
I would have picked him, yeah, and moved him and Mario about in the, yeah, back row, yeah, just to look to hammer that line out and get a real advantage there. I don't know whether he's still struggling with his back a little bit or.
Sometimes though, you know, they pick players on a bench that they're obviously going to get on, but they make more of an impact. And you know, that's why I sort of benched a fair bit for Wales. I'd make such an impact off the bench. But when it's a close call between two players, often the player they think is going to make more of an impact in the game coming off the bench will often start, because, you know, you want someone when they come off the bench to
make an
impact.
Maybe if it's pure 50-50. But then I think the same as Joe. I think if you're going to... The All Blacks have pretty much always got such an efficient set piece. It's quite difficult to disrupt opposition scrums, All Black scrums, because they're good at it. And also, they're missing... You know, a couple of guys missing a couple of loose heads, and that's actually probably, if not deep out, Ben Moon, very, very good prop. So they'll try and disrupt that. But when you've got someone like Courtney Laws knocking about, if he's fit, I would stick him in just because he's 6'7" with 11-foot arms. And it's like, yeah, and it's just, if you can cut off the ball that they're winning and make their day at the line out and set piece as difficult as possible, you just stand a much, much better chance.
In terms of these autumn internationals, Marshy, how important is it leading up to the World Cup? Is it something they're thinking about now? Are these incredibly important for... I mean, New Zealand are obviously going to be favourites going into the World Cup.
I don't think mentally it has an effect. I think it's just a gauge of as to where you're at. Now, you know, it's not rocket science that England haven't played the All Blacks in 4 years, so there's an opportunity to see where they're at. Unfortunately for, I guess, England's predicament is that the injury problem. So it's not probably a true gauge. But, you know, I don't think it's World Cup form that these internationals have an effect on. I think they're just an opportunity for the players to get an idea of the pace and the tempo that the game's progressing at when the Southern and Northern Hemisphere haven't played each other for a while, where the laws are sort of progressing in the way that game's evolving. So, it certainly, I think, is important for knowledge leading into Rugby World Cup, but I don't think mentally it has an effect. So, if, for example, the All Blacks were to win today, when they go to the Rugby World Cup and they come up against England, we beat them in November, so we should beat them now. I don't think that's a part of it.
Well, just on that, I listened to something prior to the first game last week with Sam Warburton. He did an interview for Telegraph or something like that, and he came out and said, it doesn't really matter. If we lose all four games, you know, it doesn't really matter because it's all about the World Cup. It's not a tournament now. It's not a thing. And I was like, he's right. I never thought like that as a player when I was in it. I went, the All Blacks are here, South Africa here, it's massive, we've got to win, they're must-win games. And I guess you do think like that as a player, but now that Warby's come out of it, he's like, well, it doesn't matter if you win or lose, and I'd love to have that attitude and see that more as for the players, because it might release the pressure off them a little bit more.
Yeah,
and
back themselves a bit.
Back themselves, and yeah, you know, you get boys that are a little bit uptight and worried about it, but it's not going to happen, is it? So I'm just dreaming.
You're dreaming, mate.
Okay, Tom,
we're going to have to round this up now. Because
yeah, round it up. If anyone's got a killer question they want to ask at the end, or now, it's fine. We're going to come to you, mate. What's your name?
Mark.
And this is the final question of the live pod, okay? You've got a 59-cap England legend. You've got a 70-cap Welsh legend, double Grand Slam winner. You've got 81-cap All Black legend. And you've got former England under-21 second-choice captain, Lucas Prop. Okay, but I'm wearing the best jumper out of the four of us. So this is it. This is the killer question, Mark. Let's do it. Oh no!
Jesus Christ!
Is the Eddie Jones England camp too tough, Joe?
You've just been teed up for like the ultimate question, and you've come at me with that one. Can I? No, I'm not going to swear. You say you can't swear, can you?
It's too late now. You can
piss
swear.
Piss off! I'm not answering. Piss off! No, what was it anyway? No, I'm not answering it. Is it too tough?
Is it too hard?
It was for me because it involved running. And lots of it, so I decided no, I don't want to do running anymore. I want to try and cling on to as much as I can for as much as I can.
You're going to chase your family around with a leaf blower? That's what you thought?
You're a stalker.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a leaf blower. It's got to be used for something.
Yeah.
Terrorising your kids.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
Hey, well done, Mark. That's rounded it off nicely, isn't it, mate?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have to call it a day now. These two have got to get off to more corporate duties and flats. I'm up for a drink if anyone wants to have a drink. Looking for friends. Thank you for coming on behalf of Guinness and the Bear Pub. We're going to release this podcast on Monday. Make sure you download it. Thank you very much. Big round of applause for Joe Marler and Justin Marshall.
And, yeah, round of applause. And also one final round of applause for my friends Roz and Jim, who got married last Saturday. Roz and Jim, there they are. Steve and Candice, there we are. Cheers, everybody.